Brothers Alphonse and Alois Kontarski played two pieces out of the Petite Suite by Claude Debussy. Starting off this hour of Let's Hear It on Classical WMUK, I'm Cara Laurence. Marie Lee is the captain of a ship called Encore Magazine, and we're back together again to talk about some of the highlights in the March issue, which is just out on newsstands in your homes, and you're able to, it's possible to pick up an issue for free in many locations around Southwest Michigan. It's great to talk to you again, Marie.
Hi, Kara. Thank you.
Well, we have reached March. This is the anniversary year of our a pandemic, and I know that's something you wrote about in your note from the editor. You're thinking about, well, this has been such an unusual set of months, and you expressed some gratitude for Encore continuing its work.
Oh, we have. I think, you know, the pandemic has hit a lot of people really, really hard, and, you know, we're no exception. You can tell in this issue we're a little bit smaller in page count than we normally are, but we have been so grateful to, especially our advertisers, because they're mostly advertiser-supported, for sticking with us, because it's allowed us to keep publishing. And actually, I feel like the magazine has gotten more popular during the pandemic, which is a great thing, because we just can't seem to keep it in the stands. You know, there aren't that many locations, or at least there aren't as many locations as before the pandemic, but the ones that we do have just empty out really fast. So yeah, I am very grateful to our readers and our advertisers for letting us just keep going.
Some people you can credit are a stable of wonderful talent, both writers and your principal photographer, Brian K. Powers, who again brought some great images to March's issue. And for the first time, Marie, the person on the front page, well, first time in a while, someone I personally know. And, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting to say, that's Ian Gorman, who I've known for years, and open up an article written by another friend, Mark Waddell, and learn so many wonderful things about someone I thought, you know, I had the gist of, but it turns out when you read an article about a friend, it can be quite eye-opening. So I thought that was really fun.
So what did you learn about Ian that you didn't know?
Good question. That he grew up in a household. His father was a DJ. I did not know that. And I knew that he had great access to fantastic music from a young age. I mean, he developed his taste really early. And I knew that he was kind of a sound engineer rat in the Western Sound Studios, because I would that was clearly his passion, but I didn't realize the you know, the extent to which it went. I didn't realize he'd worked with so many artists, and it's really hitting a peak for him right now. Even during a pandemic, there are musicians seeking him out for work, and that's another uplifting part of the story.
What I really liked is when Ian was talking about how the musicians, I mean, he's very, very tied into the musical community and is very supportive of them, but also all the other people that are starting to see that good sound is important for what they do, like podcasts and webinars, you know, and so they're starting to see more business growing that way. And the stable, we call it the stable of 20-somethings that he has, all these young engineers that work with him. They're so funny when they talk about it, you know, about, I never thought I would do a webinar, but here I am, you know, and I think it's really great, because I think they see that what they do is valued in many ways, not just by, you know, musicians and people who love music.
Mark Waddell pulled some great comments from their conversation to use in the article, like Ian saying he designed his studio so that you couldn't get a sense of time. It's like Vegas, no windows, no clocks. You can focus on making
exactly. Which, yeah, I mean, if it wasn't like so beautifully full of the stuff that he loves, like Christmas lights and, you know, that organ that lights up and looks like a carnival. You know, you'd walk in there and go, wow, this place is really dark. But it's, you know, I think it also helps them focus. It keeps them very focused on what they're doing.
I also liked the analogy to a space capsule and Mission Command, where Ian is Mission Command behind the mixing board and the artist in the other studio doing their thing there in the space capsule, finishing their track.
It kind of looks like it when you look at the pictures. I mean, he's got lots of knobs and buttons and lights, you know. But he was saying, you know, it's interesting because you look at everything he's got. One of the things that Mark really tried to capture was when you go into Ian's studio, it is this amazing combination of modern and vintage, right? He has this old radio, and this thing is like, you know, it's probably 5 feet tall. It's mm-hmm. huge. And it's one of those, you know, and his dad gave it to him when he opened the La Luna studio in the Foundry. And they actually use it for recording because he's able to hook the sound into it. So if they want that old-timey radio feel or sound, they get it, you know. And so it's more than just a decoration. And it's fascinating to walk around and see the things that he has personally collected that he also uses when he's making music, like the organ. The organ was sort of, I can't remember the whole story about where he got it. I think it was gifted to him. Like somebody had it and they donated it to him. And, you know, it sits in the main studio, but it is just beautiful. And he said he's had a couple artists that have, you know, attempted to do some stuff on it, but nobody's really jumped on it and done it yet.
It also goes into the renovation of this old factory space where the studio, La Luna Recording Studios, is. He grew out of his garage there's a funny quote about worrying that neighbors might not want to hear 8 hours of tuba recorded. But found a wonderful place to rehab, and thanks to the building owner, you know, was able to create just an ideal spot for making recordings. It has to be quiet. It has to be somewhat isolated and big enough to allow for bands that can really get packed in there. And
right. And it is amazing how big the main floor space is. I mean, I don't think we really captured it, but when you talk about Ian sitting in his time capsule or in his space, you know, or in his, you know, mission control, it is a little bit like that because you look out across this very big main floor, which is the main studio, to these two smaller booths that have windows where you can see people singing. And, I mean, it is huge. I mean, he could have a small orchestra in that room recording. In fact, I think he has.
It's the former Star Brass Works Foundry in the Edison neighborhood. It's fun even for a drive-by, in fact, La Luna Studios. And it's the cover story for this month's edition of Encore Magazine. EncoreKalamazoo.com is the website where you can actually click and read the story. There's no paywall, although a subscription to Encore is also available at the website. Just a quick follow-up about the writer, Mark Waddell, who I know his work well. I've read so many articles, he writes for, he's a freelance writer, right?
He is a freelance writer, right, yeah.
How does that work? Does he come to you and say, I have an idea? Does he come to you with a whole list of ideas, or do you reach out to Mark knowing his work already?
Well, we've obviously known Mark's work for a long, long time, and because he's worked at the Kalamazoo Gazette and was one of the main entertainment and feature writers. So I was really familiar with his work, and when I found out he was freelancing, I knew he was doing some work for Second Wave, I just reached out and said, you know, are you interested in writing for us? And he came back in, and he came in and we talked, and one of the things that we offer, I guess, writers that love to write are the ability to do long form, you know, stories that are more than, you know, 500 words, which is kind of a typical word count for a story that you find on an online publication, you know, and because we feel like, you know, it takes a really talented writer to be able to capture not just what people say, but the feel. you know, the feel of the space and the feel of what these people have created. And so Mark and I talked about, you know, a couple of ideas he had and a couple ideas I had. And we really landed on Ian Gorman because of his enthusiasm for the topic and the fact that it was a story that he could go into depth on. And so Mark's actually doing another story for us in a couple months about the whole biking scene in Kalamazoo. Yeah. He is an avid biker. Yeah. And so he was really excited about that, too. So I think at Mark's point in his life right now is he can kind of pick and choose the stuff he really wants to write about for us. And, you know, we're just thrilled because it turns out very, very well. Like the story about Ian just turned out great.
The story of Ian Gorman can be found in this month's Encore magazine, and it is a great read. I just gobbled it up. Marie, let's move on to some of the other highlights of the issue. And I think probably next we should talk about poems that ate our ears.
Yep. I mean, it's so funny because I remember hearing that phrase, poems that ate our ears, and I never really knew what it was until I was talking to Friends of Poetry President Elizabeth Kerlikowski about something totally different. We were having a conversation about something, you know, that wasn't even related, and she said something like, you know, this is a big year. We're going to try to get them back on the buses. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then she explained it to me. I thought, you know, we need to revisit this. This is so this youth contest, back in, when they first started it, they would place poems on placards and then put them inside the buses, on the outside of the buses, so that people could read these short kid poems written by kids. And so, yeah, it's amazing to think this has been around since 1976.
1970, I can't count that high. So, yeah. And the now that I'm looking, I get the article now, and I see that the idea came from buses in New York City and just the idea, let's bring it to Kalamazoo. But the competition, and it is a competition, you submit poetry, young people submit poetry. It used to be regional, but it's actually international now.
Right. Yeah. She said that they would, you know, they because of the availability of the internet, there's no reason why it needs to be just local. So they've been getting, they get entries from all over the place. But it, you know, they're youth. It's a youth poetry contest. So, and there is no cash prize. It's just you get to have your poem in a book. And then this year, you know, maybe on a bus and driving around Kalamazoo, Michigan.
A way to have a surreal moment during a surreal time is reading poetry in an unexpected place. Julie Smith is the writer. Is she also a poet or primarily an article writer?
She's primarily a freelance writer. She does all sorts of different kinds of writing. She does some content for companies for their webs, for their websites. So she's also, we were really lucky. Julie relocated. She's married to a man who's in the military, and they relocated here. And so when she did, she reached out to us and said, you know, I want to write. And, I think that she, you know, she, has a affinity for literature. And so this is the second story she's written for us about, literature. The first one was about Emmy Caston's children's books, and this is the second one about the poetry. And I love how Julie embraces it. She chased down that story about Gregory Moore and his poem, and Gerard McLeod, which is another name I'm sure you know.
Very familiar with Gerard McLeod and his wonderful voice. Yes, former general manager of WMUK. I must admit, at this point, I'd kind of like to share with listeners why I reached out to you in the first place to talk about stories of West Michigan and Encore magazine. It's true that Encore magazine is an underwriter here on WMUK, but I don't have that discussion with our underwriting manager. As I host this program, it seems overwhelming sometimes that I can't cover everything. And I wanted to talk to another person who is also looking at trying to find everything and put it in a format as well. And it's I was hoping, and I think we have formed a little bit of camaraderie together as people who feel that's the mission here. And during the pandemic, Encore, as you said, it has more meaning in a way. You know, it's not like a throwaway entertainment magazine. It's like, this is the life I want back as I look at it. And that's why I thought, I really want to hear from Marie Lee about what she's going through and how these editions are being put together, and how together, if we keep the mirror up of this wonderful community and show it to our community, we can all come back together that much sooner when it's safe. Does that make sense, Marie?
Right. Oh, it does. You know, it's interesting because we find hope and that things are getting better in interesting places, like our events of note, which is in the back of the magazine, where we do a pretty comprehensive calendar of events, entertainment events in the community. You know, it is so small compared to what it was, and everything is so virtual. But we see, you know, people are starting to send us stuff for live events and outside events. And to us, that's a sign of hope. You know, if events of note grows back to the size that it was pre-pandemic, then, you know, then I'll be happy because I'll know that life is back to normal. Because so many things, especially the art community, have been curtailed by the pandemic. I think the other thing too is that when you can't go out and see people, it really means a lot to be able to have some sort of connection to your community and find out that there is still things. There's still life out there. There's still a lot happening out there. And so at the moment, you know, when it's all safe for us to venture back out again, hopefully the magazine, the stories that we've been able to give people over the last year, give them a new appreciation and fondness for the community they live in. Because it is, I mean, we say this all the time to each other, but Kalamazoo is a remarkable, remarkable town. It's the eighth place I've lived in my life. And, you know, there's just not another town like it. And so it's really a lot of fun to have the job I have, to find these stories and talk about them and look at them in a new way. But yeah, somebody asked me once if we ever run out of stuff to write about. No. Oh no, like you. Sometimes you just can't cover enough.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, when I moved to Kalamazoo in 1989 for a sophomore year of college at Western Michigan University, people talked about the Upjohn Company as though it had just been sold or something. It was still very vivid and very influential. And now it's 30 years later, and I realize people's memories of Upjohn and what it meant are fading, and we're losing people that worked there. And I appreciate the focus on Jeremy Winkworth, who has sort of taken it upon himself to remind people of the influence of this company that helped make Kalamazoo.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly timely that we ran the story on Jeremy, given that the company that Upjohn became, which is Pfizer, you know, a couple mergers later, is the company that rolled out the first vaccine for the pandemic. And so, but you know, another thing about Kalamazoo, we are so proud of our roots. And the Upjohn Company, a lot of people are very, very, very fond of their time having worked there, what it meant in the community. And so Jeremy, we actually got this through Tom Vance, and a lot of people might recognize that name. He was forever the communications director for Portage Public Schools, and then he went to work for the Kalamazoo Community Foundation, and he suggested Jeremy to me. And it was a great find. So, you know, Jeremy has this website that he posts all the stuff he finds and lots of documents, and he has movies and films on there. All from, you know, the heyday of Upjohn, when Upjohn was the Upjohn Company in Kalamazoo.
It's all in the new Encore magazine. EncoreKalamazoo.com is where you'll find the issue, and you can also subscribe there as well. Finally, let's look at five faves. Lynn Houghton, again, your indispensable historian for Encore.
I could not do it without Lynn. She's fabulous.
What items did she highlight this time?
You know, it's interesting. She actually found some stuff I had not heard of, because in the past we've had other stories similar to this from the folks at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum. So she focused on windmills, wooden windmills. I had no idea those were ever made in Kalamazoo. I was familiar with the corset and the regalia, but the game flinch. When I sent this to our copy editor, Margaret, to be copy edited, she wrote back and said, "I grew up playing flinch." And I was like, wow, you know, I'd never even heard of this game. And so I'm hoping that maybe we can have maybe a flinch resurgence or something. We can find old copies of it.
You're saying the word flinch, F-L-I-N-C-H?
Yes, it's a card game that was established by a bookkeeper named Arthur Patterson in Kalamazoo in the early 1900s. And by the 1930s, it had become one of the most popular games in America. And it's called flinch. Now, I got to be honest with you, you know, I was reading the description. It's like involves 150 numbered cards and it's played anywhere from 2 to 8 people. And it's the object of the game is get rid of your cards in the proper sequence. Right. It sounds like something I might have played as a kid, but I don't remember.
It's not about bringing up the most embarrassing memories of your life with friends as a party game, flinch.
Exactly. Yeah, this is before you had to divulge a lot of stuff you didn't want to divulge. That's right. Yeah. My goodness, how card games have changed.
She reminds us that Kalamazoo was once a major industrial hub for corsets as well.
Yes.
Which reminds me, if you'll indulge me, the one joke I ever wrote had to do with a pun on corsets. I pretended there was a Kalamazoo corset company called the Wimsky Corset Company here in Kalamazoo, and I would tell people convincingly that this was a very, very popular business, and they created corsets for dancers in burlesque, and then they upgraded those corsets to nickel eye holes, you know, for the ties so they wouldn't get so sticky. And but as it turns out, the nickel was not great, and it kind of corroded, and the ties got stuck again, and so nobody wanted to use the Nikolai Wimsky corsets off anymore. A very bad classical joke.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
They couldn't take their Nikolai Wimsky corsets off.
No, I'm not that one. Oh my gosh.
Oh, thank
that's
you.
A good joke. Yeah.
That's it. And then I stopped writing jokes.
That was your swan song and your debut at the same time.
Marie, I have a piece of music that was, of course, recorded by La Luna Studios with engineer Ian Gorman, and it's an artist named Joel Mabus, who has recorded a number of albums there. We'll finish with that. Thank you so much for sharing highlights of the issue with me today on Classical WMUK.
Thank you, Kara.
All right. Bye-bye. Until next month.
See you next month.
We got maniacs at large. We got lunatics in charge. We got politics of fear and greed. People shouting in the street. People stomping with their feet. Satisfaction is what they need. Now this world's in lots of trouble. Unless you're living in a bubble, you can read it on every face. But I'm not here to bring a grudge. I stand before you as my judge. So listen as I plead my sorry case. Is it a crime to play my ukulele when all the world is blue. Is it a crime to strum a little something when the troubles keep a-coming at you? Two by two, is it a sin to sing a sunny song when the sky is falling down? If it's a crime to sing and play the ukulele, you'll have to run me out of town. Yes, sir, run me out of town.